small PA. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirits will never die. We will not go down in the night. Everybody, we will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
Well, I gotta think that we're not alone.
I'm sitting in my house watching all this happen, and I've arrived to a point where I just can't keep my mouth shut anymore.
Guerrilla Radio, you're not alone. Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, the Canadian political class support of the genocide in Palestine is reiterated in its active collusion in starting and sustaining the Ukrainian conflict, currently wiping out a generation. Prime Minister Trudeau recently bolstered further that support with promises of hundreds of millions of more Canadian dollars to ensure the fighting will continue for yet another year. And at last month's G7 meetings in Italy, he promised $5 billion to the G7 Extraordinary Revenue Acceleration Loans for Ukraine Fund. Meanwhile, inheritor of the 2014 coup Canada helped engineer, Volodymyr Zelensky, has shuttered Ukraine's political opposition parties and nixed elections entirely, while too closing down all but regime-friendly media outlets and criminalizing online critics. Glenn Michalchuk is president of both Peace Alliance Winnipeg and the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians, or AUUC. He's been active in the peace movement for 40 years, going back to Reagan's dirty wars in Latin America. Welcome back to the show, Glenn.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Canada, Glenn, is carrying water now for both Israel and Kiev, to the detriment of both our treasury and global reputation, I'll add. But worse than this, you argue Canada is destroying, not saving Ukraine. How so, Glenn?
Well, it has to do with the Canadian support for the war in Ukraine, which is, I think, more and more people are coming to understand, is really a NATO proxy war in Ukraine. 2 years ago when the war started, most people scoffed at that idea. But it's become very clear now that the prospects for peace in Ukraine are being completely sidelined in the favor of pursuing this NATO-led war that the NATO countries have engaged in, not so much because of the issues of protecting Ukraine, but for the issues of confronting Russia. And if you look at that history, that is exactly what led up to this war in the first place, is this idea of confronting Russia through Ukraine, using NATO, and originally having Ukraine be part of NATO, but that has been sidelined for the time being. So this is how Ukraine is being destroyed. It's being used. There was an opportunity to prevent this war from even breaking out. And once it did break out, there was an opportunity to end it quite early on. But that was derailed again by these efforts of NATO to continue the war.
Well, you know, just like people would have us believe that the situation in Gaza began because of and on October 7th, they'd also like us to believe that this war between Russia and Ukraine or the Kyiv regime started in 2022. Well, when we know it didn't start in 2022, it started, at least this iteration of it, started really in 2014. 2014, as I mentioned in the introduction, when Canada supported and sustained the coup that overthrew an elected, a democratically elected government and led the way to what has now, the fruition of which has been this regime in place now that Zelensky is the nominal head of. What do we know, Glenn, about the real story of the nature of that regime?
Well, it's exactly as you said, I think, in the introduction. First of all, that there's an interesting history to this, to the Zelensky government. Zelensky came to government on the basis of the interests of the Ukrainian people for to settle the civil war that had been going on in the Donbass region, and for him to deal with, and his government to deal with, internal problems in Ukraine related to corruption, related to the poor workings of the economy, and so on. But Zelensky clearly changed course on that, and now his actions are totally against the interests of the people of Ukraine, by and large, because he has become totally beholden to this NATO proxy war. As you can see by his periodic visits to Western capitals, whether it be in Washington, as he recently did in the NATO summit, where he continuously asks for more weapons and more money to wage this war.
Well, for his part, the Prime Minister, our Prime Minister Trudeau, he says, quote, "Canada and our international partners are united in our support of a just and lasting peace for Ukraine, a laudable goal. To the Ukrainians who continue to stand strong in defense of their homeland, know that we will keep supporting you until victory." Well, we've seen, we know that Ottawa takes its marching orders from Washington, D.C., more than ever. It's become apparent that there's going to be a change of power in the South. Come November, already the signals are that it's not going to be favorable for this long war effort that the Americans have tired of, as they did in Afghanistan before it. What do you think, Glenn, about Canada's to keep on supporting until victory this struggle against Russia? I'm not sure what victory Mr. Trudeau is actually envisioning here. Can you help me out?
Yes. Well, I mean, not only Trudeau, but this has been the general line of NATO and all the NATO countries is that victory is based on the ground. It's based on Ukraine reclaiming all the territory that it's lost as a result of the Russian invasion, reclaiming Crimea, and that has been the NATO's policy consistently throughout. It's an unrealistic policy. It flies in the face of real developments on the ground that many have pointed out, and not only people who have looked at this war from perspectives of the left, but other people such as Jeffrey Sachs and even commentators such as Douglas MacGregor, who was in the Trump administration and is hardly a left-leaning person. They point out that this war is unwinnable at this point. So for Trudeau and others to continue to say this is what condemns Ukraine to this perpetual war, which will eventually end, but it condemns Ukraine to this continuing sacrifice. And it flies in the face of developments that are to the contrary in terms of, say, for example, the recent initiatives of Orban to travel to both Kiev and Russia to talk about peace, which is being generally derided in the European Union. Because if one is to look at this question, the settlement of this war is going to have to take into account the very real situation on the ground. And people like Trudeau are ignoring that or are ignorant of that. And the sad thing is that back in April of 2022, a much different settlement may have been possible to this war. A much, much different settlement may have been possible. And of course, if we go back even further to late 2021 and even into early 2022, there was a possibility to avoid the war totally by simply agreeing to implement the Minsk agreements. And that would have kept Ukraine a whole and sovereign country.
Well, you know that, and I know that, Glenn. But the Prime Minister, in a release from his office, not even a week old now, he is again reiterating this support. He talks about a meeting that he's had with the NATO-Ukraine Council to build the longstanding support for Ukraine. Again, he reiterates he's going to commit further assistance, which means money, of course, $500 million in addition to military assistance funding, he says. $500 million is nothing these days, it seems, but it's on top of the billions that we've already spent, and it's all... looks to be aimed, or at least the large proportion of this $500 million, at military allocations to profit the defense industries here in Canada, to the detriment of the people in Ukraine. Meanwhile, Zelensky himself has started talking in view of the political situation in the United States. I imagine he's trying to leverage something out of them, but he's saying that he's entertaining the idea of talking to Putin about winding this thing down. Have you followed the approaches, the rapprochement between the two countries, Glenn?
Yes, I have. I mean, one can't ignore what's happening in the States, as you point out, because it does indicate that a change in government in the United States, a change in the presidency, is going to impact greatly impact the enthusiasm of the United States to support this war, unlimited supplies of weapons and money. There's a couple of things to point out. Number one, I think these countries are positioning themselves for a partitioned Ukraine, and that may well be the settlement that Zelensky tries to salvage out of this. So a partitioned Ukraine, while it would end the war, it would just create further flashpoints down the road. A partitioned Ukraine, of course, would be the partition that is aligned with the West, would be forever looking to, again, instigate a situation where there could be conflict. And the partition that would be part of, whether independent or aligned with Russia, would, of course, still mean the division of Ukraine. So I think there are a lot of things at work here in the positioning of various forces here. And I think largely it's leading to the question that Ukraine will be partitioned. There will be a pro-Western section, if you like, of Ukraine, always ready to serve Western interests. And there will be another section of Ukraine, whether independent or aligned or even, you know, completely under the aegis of the of Russia, that it would be, a division and a different type of Ukraine, whether it would even be called that. But this I think is just shows the how this whole situation has unraveled and has again been entirely to the detriment of the people of Ukraine. And things progress to a degree where sometimes the situation cannot be salvaged and turn around. But I think that's the kind of thing that we'll see unfold within the next months or maybe next year as towards what Ukraine might look like going forward. And it's very unfortunate. It's very tragic for the people of Ukraine.
If we remember back, there was a time when Ukraine profited as a point of transit for Russian gas going into Europe. And that was the beginnings of all of this stuff.
When we're talking about Ukraine, I think it's important to point out that a great deal of the situation in Ukraine, and you mentioned about Ukraine being a transit route for Russian gas, that's the real tragedy here, is that Ukraine had a choice to be something else. It had a chance to be a bridge between Europe and Russia and the countries to the east, and it chose something else. And I think part of that is of course, the responsibility of how countries such as Canada and the NATO alliance manipulated Ukraine. But we can't divorce that from the internal politics in Ukraine and the internal politics of this extreme Ukraine nationalism, which is reflected deeply in a large element of the Ukrainian diaspora, and they bear large measure. Those in that section of the Ukrainian diaspora who drove this war, who drove for confrontation, not recently, but over decades of pushing policy into that kind of confrontation, pushing the destabilization of Ukrainian politics and the division of Ukrainian politics. So they bear a large measure. I do think that whatever happens in the U.S. elections, either a Trump victory or a Biden victory, it means people need to be very aware that the world is going into a very dangerous situation. Because if for a time the U.S. Loses interest in Ukraine, it is, as you mentioned, what Vance said, it's only to focus on China and create problems there, most likely with Taiwan, and the danger that Taiwan will be a repeat of a country being used as Ukraine was to advance U.S. interests there. Taiwan or the Philippines, but most likely Taiwan, of course, because it is the closest point to China.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Glenn Michalchuk. Glenn is president of both Peace Alliance Winnipeg and the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians, or AUUC. He's been active in the peace movement for many years, going back to Ronald Reagan's dirty wars in Latin America. I think, Glenn, only old gray hairs like you and me might even remember that, or even remember Ronald Reagan, for that matter. But it's interesting to see the decline, the mental decline of Joe Biden. And remembering Reagan, who also he had demented in his later years, and it was covered up. It was covered up much more effectively than Biden's is. But I guess perhaps Biden's a more serious case. When you mentioned the diaspora, the Ukrainian diaspora in Canada, you and I have talked before how it's split into kind of these two different camps. One of them, as you're alluding, has been working for this destabilization of the relationship, breaking away from Russia, and even Russophobia, I would argue, the civil war that preceded the Russian intervention. You never hear it in those terms here, intervention, that it was to save the people of the Donbass that had been subject to atrocious bombings for years, ever since 2014, because they wouldn't go along with the coup government. But when you talk about the forces in Canada that have been working towards that end, we can't forget first among them are, what is she called, the assistant prime minister or something, Glenn? Chrystia
Deputy
Freeland. Deputy Freeland. I've seen recent reports that her political fortunes seem to be a little tremulous right now. Just a year ago, it seemed she was a shoo-in to replace Justin Trudeau, and there was rumors that she was active in undermining his premiership as well. What's the situation politically here in Canada amongst the diaspora people and Freeland and the kind of influence she exerts?
Well, of course, she brings the influence of the right wing, the Cold War elements of the diaspora. She brings it right into the cabinet room, into the decision making of the federal government. But it's not only her. I mean, the organization that we're talking about that has really promoted a conflict, or promoted before outright conflict, political conflict in Ukraine, has been the Ukrainian Canadian Congress. I mean, you can read their documents of their conventions. They have consistently favored arming Ukraine, making it part of NATO. And parallel to them is the Ukrainian World Congress, whose current head is Paul Grode, who was the former head of the UCC, the Ukrainian Canadian Congress. And of course, they took disastrous positions in support of Hunka when he was lauded in Parliament. They supported him. They supported
This is Yaroslav Hunka, the Ukrainian Canadian guy who was, it turns out, was a former SS soldier, and they had the whole Parliament standing and applauding for this guy.
Right. And so this is the politics. This is it was no accident, and it was no accident that they came to his defense and still continue to come to his defense. But it's that is the whole political trend there. But if we're to talk about the people from Ukraine who have come to Canada because of the war, I mean, I know somewhat of their feelings about this war. They are opposed to the war. They want the war solved. They're not on the same level as these ideologues of the Ukrainian Canadian Congress and others who are pushing confrontation. I mean, first of all, I think it's almost a million people are now in Canada from Ukraine. They're probably not going to go back. First of all, they won't have much of a country to go back to, but they're probably not going to go back. So they've been permanently dislocated from their homes, having to build new lives. But I don't think this section is at all supportive of continuing the war for no ends other than now, for sure, which is the end of NATO, and it's trying to salvage something out of the situation.
Sorry to step on you, Glenn. I'm just curious that this newest wave of Ukrainian immigrants to Canada, or refugees, maybe, I'm not sure how you typify them. Are they approaching your organization and the other organization, or just, you know, not bothering? Are you seeing a more questioning or people, you know, knocking on your doors, new Canadians from Ukraine?
Well, only in the sense, I think, in terms of approaching both organizations, they're approaching both organizations for whatever assistance they sometimes need with things. But when I say my understanding of where they're at is, it's from we have within our organization people who are, you know, members whose families have been part of the AUC for several generations. We also have people who are recent immigrants to Canada, not necessarily from this immediate war, but from earlier periods, just the economic immigration to Canada for a better life. And they are in touch, and they know, and they talk with people. And of course, even within the peace movement, we talk with these people. And you know people who know people at work, and almost universally, their opinion is against the war because of what it's doing to their people. And I would point out that was evident even from the early stages of the war, when you heard the news coverage of these demonstrations organized by the Ukrainian Canadian Congress. The media would talk to people, and there was clearly two types of people they talked to, those that were spokespersons for the organizations, which gave all the position of sending arms, NATO no-fly zone, and so on. And then other people that they spoke to said, I'm worried about my family. What's going to happen? My father's there. My brother's there. My husband is there. We're worried about this. Of course, you know, people are responding to also an attack on their country, but they were not enthusiastic and gung-ho for... In my opinion, they were not enthusiastic and gung-ho for trying to pursue war. They were looking for solutions.
Well, we got to remember, too, when Zelensky initially was elected, he's, as I mentioned earlier, he's banned elections now, and his term has run out. So he's actually a military proconsular. I don't know what his official title would be, although he still gets the respect and support of our current prime minister. And to be fair to him, he did apologize for betting the Nazi in the parliament, saying it was a horrendous violation of the memory of the millions who died in the Holocaust and that it was a mistake and embarrassment. And I guess the first division between he and Freeland, perhaps, I'm going out on a limb myself there. Glenn, what about, we see videos within Ukraine of these in Kyiv and the areas controlled by the Kyiv regime, of guys getting, you know, hoisted off the streets and chucked into vans and press ganged to the front, where, depending on which stories you read, they're just thrown into what's described as the meat grinder with hardly any training. And I've seen these videos where some of them, these guys aren't exactly like the typical fighting age males. You know, these are guys that look like they're in their 40s and 50s, some of them being press ganged. What's the environment like? Do you know from people you're hearing reports from within your organization, with family still there?
Well, that the situation you described with the resistance to the conscription, that has been going on for considerable time. Men have been going on, living underground, basically, to try and avoid being captured on the streets and forced. That is well documented, and it's a big factor in people's resistance. There's a recent poll that was actually done by an organization with Ukraine, an organization totally within the, regular Ukrainian life of the people there, that showed that most people thought resisting conscription, especially young people, was a fair thing to do to avoid going into this war. So this is a fact of life that people are resisting this war. Of course, many men were able to flee Ukraine before the wars had gone into these advanced stages and the conscription, the forced conscription. Now, some countries in Europe are talking about forcing these men to go back to Ukraine. And I just did read that somewhere the average age of a member of the armed forces of the Ukraine is now in their 40s. So, yes, a whole generation has been lost. And of course, there's these repeated news about various attempts on Zelensky's life. Oh. Of course, all of them are dismissed just simply as people who are acting on behalf of Russia. But one has to wonder if they're also not people who are acting just on behalf of their anger over what's been happening and their desire to change things through more violent means.
Well, we're definitely headed into familiar territory, it seems, history reiterating or echoing. We're fast out of time, Glenn. PeaceAllianceWinnipeg.ca. I'm looking at the website now, and most of it, of course, the big issue has been Gaza and Palestine, what's going on there. It's taking a lot of the oxygen out of the room for the Ukraine Russia situation as well, and a lot of other things too. But I recommend people go to peacealliancewinnipeg.ca to see what Glenn and the rest of the folks over there are getting up to, and to keep informed outside of the media cycle, which is not very informative sometimes. Thanks a lot, Glenn, for coming on again, eh?
Thank you very much. Always appreciate the opportunity to come on and speak about issues.
And I want to thank everybody who shows up week in and week out and has done for 40 weeks in a row in Victoria to demonstrate against the ongoing slaughter of innocents that our government in Canada here and provincially and even at the city level are very sanguine about, mind-bogglingly. So thanks a lot, though, Glenn.
Thank you.
That's all I got for this week. Till the next time.
Our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
Good, bad, and ugly news on Guerrilla Radio at guerrilla-radio.com. That's Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every week.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Did you know the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, a.k.a. SFPERG, has been leading social and environmental activism on campus for 40 years? SFPERG is student activism, by students, for students. Do you have a vision for a brighter future? Are you passionate about changing the world? Visit us at www.sfperg.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about getting involved today.